and welcome to the UK and Ireland Minnesota Vikings Fan Club podcast. I am your host and co-president, Mr. Richard Dawson, and I am joined by my two amigos, vice president and all-round nice guy, Mr. John McDonald, and show producer and co-president, Mr. Reese Field. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hello, gentlemen.
Oh, it's always a good start. It's always a good start. So, about a week to go to the draft, about a week. I think we've exhausted most of our draft conversation, but there is a little bit more, we can squeeze in. So tonight we're going to talk about, are we heading towards an 18-game NFL season? The opener is going to be in Brazil this season, and that is what everyone is talking about. Are we leaning towards an 18-game season? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? I know my two amigos in the booth have got some very strong opinions on this. Then, obviously, we need to talk about Stefon Diggs. Where's he gone? And has his career progressed since leaving the Vikings? Could you call it that? And finally, we're going to get around to, yeah, we've got to talk about the draft. We've got to do something about the draft. We're talking about pick three or pick five or pick four. Really, what are we wanting to trade to go up to get one of those quarterbacks? Let's have everyone's opinion on that. So, 18-game season. Let's get into it. So our two favourite teams, the Green Bay Packers and the Philadelphia Eagles, are going to be playing game two of the next season. A game that I just wish there would be a draw and lots of injuries. No, of course, I would never wish that. But it sort of signifies, or at least Reese, tell us what people are saying that this is signifying for the league.
Well, there's always been talk about since when the league expanded to have a 17-game season of, well, it's only a matter of time before it goes to 18 games. One conference is already getting an extra game a season. You know, it's flipping each way. But is this a trend for, you know, every team, whether that's as a road team or as a home team, having an international series game a year? The NFL is really pushing the international marketing, right? As a sport, it's never really been up there with, you know, the viewership of certain sports, you know, football, for example. Premier League is watched religiously around the world, but the same can't be said about the NFL. It just doesn't have that same following. So forcing teams to play overseas might be the way to increase that.
Well, it's a championship that's watched religiously in our house, mainly because we're not very good. But I sort of see where you're coming from. John, I know you've got some strong opinions on this. Come on, let's have it. What do you think?
I do love the international series, and I see it expanding vastly in the next couple of years. I could speak for hours on what I think the international series is going to become, but I'll keep that for another pod down the line. On an 18-week season, I can see it happening in the future, but I don't think it's happening anytime soon, to be honest. I think we've just moved to the 17-game season. I don't see us moving to an 18-game season at the moment. But once the markets are sorted out internationally, there's a lot of places I think the NFL can go, especially with recent stuff happening that hasn't happened before. Yes, but I can definitely see teams moving to an international market, and the international market's always expanding. The teams see the benefit of what they're getting from it now.
When we moved to a 17-week season, I was fairly positive about it. I thought, you know, a lot of preseason games are wasted, really. It's to try out some plays and formation and have a look at your depth. I like to just get into the season and let's get some more proper games underway. And then you start to hear some of the professionals talk about it, and you maybe change your opinion. I remember Chris Carter, and he wasn't actually talking about an extra game in the season. What he was talking about was the overtime rule. But it does make you think. Chris Carter on Good Morning Football mentioned that by the time, if they were to go to a second period of overtime, the meal that you have as a preparation for that game is all used up. All the energy is gone because you play a 100-mile-an-hour game for nearly 4 hours, including overtime. Now, if you multiply that by 17 games, you're probably already teetering on the edge of what is capable for an athlete within a 19, 18-week season. And then obviously you've got the postseason as well. If they start expanding it to 18 games, are we just asking a bit too much of these players to be able to give a consistent, great performance each week? Are we starting to say now that we need more talent across the roster because you're going to get more injuries and then therefore you're going to need some people to fill in? Are people just going to get, Reece, sorry to mention it, but the old Liverpool adage of we can't play two games in a week because I'm a bit tired. This sounds like a little bit of a leak into that rhetoric. And I don't know if I'm on the face of it as a fan, you want to see more football, you want to see more competitive football. But when you do start hearing professionals talk about it and professionals are saying that this is a bad move, you sort of got to listen to them, haven't you?
Well, I think if you're going to go to an 18-week season or an 18-game season, rather, you're going to be having a 20-week schedule. You're going to have an extra bye week. There's no way, you know, in a sport that is so flat out, you know, it is a 100-mile-an-hour sport. No matter what people say about all the breaks and the commercials and stuff like that, when you're on the field, it's go, go, go. It's 11 explosions and collisions every single time. And to go and think that that's achievable with the current rest that the league has and what the players have, it's just not going to happen. You need an extra bye week in there. And I think if they've moved and they've all of a sudden brought in this extra bye week in a year or two's time, I wouldn't be surprised if, a couple of years further down the line, we do see an 18-week season, or 18-game season, rather.
It's a good point about the extra bye week and everything like that and players getting exhausted. So do you guys see the roster being expanded then? Maybe up to 60?
It wouldn't surprise me. Because like I say, it's with more games, you're going to get more injuries, you're going to get more fatigue, and potentially the quality of football declines. I mean, there's already asterisks against loads of records in the league now because it's been done over a 17-week season instead of what the old format was. And really, you should separate those records now into what was a previous era and what is a current era in terms of games played, because it's not like for like, it's not the same. So I think it's two questions almost there, John. Would I want to see an expanded roster, and do I think it's a good idea? The problem you've got already is the salary cap. If you increase the amount of players that you've got to play, you've got to increase the salary cap. If you're increasing the week, it's just more. And the game that you look forward to on Thursday night or the game that you look forward to on a Sunday starts to become, it's just another game in the season, and maybe you have that little less excitement. You know, if Christmas was every day, it wouldn't be Christmas. So if we keep adding more and more games onto the season, I don't know if I'm supportive of it.
First of all, I feel like if you're gonna adjust the roster, I don't think you increase the number of roster spots, like Rich said about the salary cap. I just feel like if they are going to change something with the roster, I feel like you just see more relaxation over the practice squad rules, you know, activations and the number of players on the practice squad, maybe further relaxation about injured reserve as well. With what you just said there, Rich, about the interest in the sport, 18 games a year really isn't much as a fan when you think about it. When you think about what people who watch, you know, baseball or basketball, you know, there's nowhere near, it doesn't even scratch the surface. And even when we talk about, you know, football and, you know, following our teams where it's a 38 or a 42 game season or whatever, however many games you may play, you know, they're still double. Then you've got all the cup games and everything that's football. So football, I can get why you can go, oh, come on, just be over now, we're not playing for anything. But 18 games is not a lot when you think about it still. Was
unless you're a Carolina fan.
Oh yeah, Carolina fans, sure, they'll have to suffer that, and Chicago Bears fans probably as well. Recent memory, they haven't had too many playoff runs, shall we say. But the other thing we're overlooking here is the marketability of it and the money that it will bring for the teams, for the owners, for the league. And just by having, you know, an extra slate of 16 games across the season, the amount of commercials we all know and we love to watch and we complain when they're taken away from us when we've got our game pass and things like that. There's so much more money in there for advertisement and that cash is king at the end of the day. And if the league sees enough money to be made from people buying tickets for an extra game and, you know, subscribing to Peacock or Hulu or whatever exclusive service the league decides to put a game on this time, you know, Disney Plus probably will end up having some by the end of it. It's impossible to see it not happening with when money gets involved.
I can't wait to see another week of State Farm adverts. Yeah, that's going to be great. I sort of get where you're coming from, Reece. Cash is king at the end of the day, and we all know that the NFL likes its money. I don't want it. Is it going to push the Super Bowl into, you know, closer to March time? I don't know. It's not for me. Put it that
way. Does the season start earlier?
Yeah, but then again,
does it start a week earlier? Not knocking preseason, because I think one thing we always overlook at preseason, it's a great chance for prospective head coaches to get a run out at calling plays. That's what usually happens in the preseason. The head coach might take, you know, some reps with the starters. If there's any second stringers, he might call plays there. But when you get to, you know, the third and fourth string, it's your wide receivers coach calling the plays and things like that. Your linebackers coach is calling defense. It's a great opportunity, the preseason, and I don't want to see it cut down anymore, because, you know, it's a great opportunity for the prospective coaches.
I get that. I mean, maybe I'm being pessimistic because the current way our roster looks versus the Lions and Green Bay this season, I don't want any more games to play. Thank you very much. Not until we've signed our quarterback of the future to lead us into the promised land. But I don't know. I mean, I will watch the international game in Brazil of the Eagles versus the Packers just out of interest. But I think that's as John, you mentioned at the start, that's really the catalyst for it. And one reason, I think the main reason is so that every time we complain that when someone wins a Super Bowl, they call themselves world champions. Well, we always get a bit irked by it because it's an American sport. Well, I think if they start playing so many international games, they'll have to shut us up, and we won't be allowed to complain about it anymore.
I just want to say that at the halftime show in Brazil, I do hope they have Nazareth playing, because love hurts.
Oh, dear.
Well done. How long have you been working on that one, John?
The moment the game was announced, I had that ready to go.
But while we're talking about the Eagles, of course, the other big news that came in today was Devontae Smith, you know, signing quite a big extension, probably peanuts compared to what Justin Jefferson's going to get. But is this the trend starting to be set for the non-quarterbacks getting a larger sum of guaranteed money when they're re-signing from their rookie deals? I feel like when Jefferson hopefully puts pen to paper, we are probably going to be looking at, or we have to be looking at something that is groundbreaking in terms of guaranteed money and average annual value.
100 mil guaranteed, 5 years. It's got to be on it. It's got to be close to that. I suppose when you're talking 18 game seasons and you're talking 53 man rosters and you're talking everyone else getting good, you want a bit of guaranteed money, because there's no guarantee that the players around you are going to be half as good as what you are, depending on whether you're worth the money. So I can understand the trend towards guaranteed money. I think it, you know, it gives the players a bit of safety net. It gives the owners and the GMs a bit to think about when you're starting to talk about contracts and who's worth it, and maybe being a bit ruthless with the people that aren't worth it. I mean, JJ's going to earn an extortionate sum of money, and he deserves it because he's the best player in the game. The new contract signed by Smith is a small indicator of that. More of a benchmark of how much more Jefferson's going to get rather than any sort of comparison, because he's twice the wide receiver that Smith is, even though he's got a deal before the end of his fifth year of his rookie deal, which I think is credit to him. He's a good fantasy player, put it that way.
Well, with these fifth-year deals coming up, now with these deals being done after 55th year, it's always a race with the franchises to get the deal done first, because the quicker you get the deal done, the cheaper you get it, because then they're going to start, you're thinking CD Lamb's going to be signing this year as well. And let's face it, he's going to want more than Smith. He's like, I'm a better player than him. You've got to give me more than that. That's the benchmark now. Let's face it, we all know Justin Jefferson's going to earn the most out of all of them there. It's not even a question. He's the best. I personally think he's the best non-quarterback in the league, but I know a lot of people think McCaffrey is the best.
It's got to be C-Mac, John. Come on, get your purple glasses off, man.
He's brilliant. I get it, but yeah.
I mean, with Jefferson, I'm just expecting to hear the words 5 years, 175 million. That's honestly what I'm expecting. I'm expecting something that's going to be touching near 30 million a year average annual value. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised if you're looking north of 110 million guaranteed in that amount, whether that comes as, you know, guaranteed money or signing bonus or however they decide to do it. He's going to get over 100 million. He's got to get over 100 million up, you know, nailed on in that contract.
It almost again looks like we know what we're talking about, because we're going from current wide receiver to former wide receiver. So let's move into Stephon Diggs. Good trade, bad trade, good career, bad career. So we heard earlier that Stephon Diggs has been on the move, and I'm going to get it out there early as possible. It looks like Vikings won the trade, because did he really do anything at the Bills apart from cause trouble? Would the Bills have been a better team without him disrupting the back office and disrupting the squad with some of his antics? And you know what? I love the Texans. I think what they've done recently is exceptionally good. But is he going to be a bad influence in their locker room? And is he going to upset their prospects to get far or to the main game in the playoffs? It's all a bit odd, isn't it? I mean, we managed to get Justin Jefferson out of that trade, so there's absolutely no way we didn't win that. But John, do you have a difference of opinion?
I do. I don't think anyone won the trade. I think both teams won that trade, to be honest. Josh Allen significantly improved when Diggs went to him. That's when Josh Allen really came out of his shell and started being the top quarterback we see now. And we got Justin Jefferson. It's more luck that we got Justin Jefferson, that the teams ahead of us didn't pick him. But we still got Justin Jefferson. But we can't say that we traded Diggs for Justin. I don't like the fact that everyone says, oh, we traded Diggs for Justin Jefferson. That's not what happened. It's very much luck that we got Justin Jefferson at that pick. But we did. And it worked out. But what Diggs did at the Bills was significant. He took them to a championship game, didn't he? He really brought Josh Allen to the top tier and showed the league what he can do. Before that, he was a middling quarterback. He really showed what Josh Allen can do. And he's not a great presence in the locker room. We all know that. He's been dragging down that roster for a little while. He wanted out of the Vikings. He made sure he got out of the Vikings. Now he's gone to the Texans. Maybe they'll get a year. They've only got him for a year, so maybe they'll get the best out of him and just get rid of him.
Yeah. I mean, you look at Diggs and Buffalo and you go, he did elevate Josh Allen. But in terms of his own career and what he was looking for, you know, to win championships, He's not got any closer than he did in 2017. He's not made it to the big game yet. I feel like the Texans now are better placed to get to the Super Bowl than the Bills ever were with Diggs in there. I feel like this is Diggs' best shot. I feel like this is the team that is the biggest challenge that the Chiefs have had since Joe Burrow had that wonderful season, took the Bengals to the Super Bowl. And I feel like they are going to get the best out of Diggs, because they didn't take him and go, well, here's you playing out your contract here. It's a case of, we will take your money, we will move it up a year, and we will give you that way out now. So you're playing for us for a year, go earn the bag in free agency, because he's never hit free agency before. That's the other thing we need to remember with Stephon Diggs. He's never had that money, or that motivation rather, to go and have the big season that takes you to free agency, like Danielle Hunter just had. You know, go get the bag. And I feel like we are going to see Stephon Diggs, probably his biggest season production wise. I feel like he's going to improve as a team player, which I think, you know, he's always been a good team player in terms of what he brings on the field. But yeah, there's always been the questions about the character. I feel like you're going to see somewhat of a veteran leader coming in now. Is he the wrong side of 30 yet? Or is he's coming up to around that, if not? And yeah, there's some good young receivers in Houston who should be looking up to Stephon Diggs and what he does on the field. For me, I still, you know, John, I know you say you don't like to say that we traded Diggs for Jefferson. Effectively, we got fortunate and we did. We just, no one knew it at the time. But until we re-signed Justin Jefferson, you know, that trade is almost a tie, shall we say. But once we re-signed Jefferson, if we can get to the big game, if we can get to the Super Bowl before Diggs gets there, then I say we won the trade.
Texans are taking a diva, the wrong side of 30, on a very expensive one-year contract. If they wanted a veteran presence who has had a bit of a redemption arc in recent seasons, why didn't they just take Odell Beckham? He sat there needing a team. Not like he hasn't done it in the past. And he'd be a darn sight cheaper and a lot better for the locker room than Stephon Diggs would be.
Well, I think this can go one of two ways. In terms of a veteran presence you bring in, you can get two impacts. You could get complete polar opposites. You could get Chris Carter or you get Antonio Brown. That's what you could get from Stephon Diggs. I really hope, because I was always a big fan of Diggs, that it's the Carter side of things. But yeah, it could implode. It could go full Antonio Brown. I don't think Diggs would ever go full Antonio Brown. But, you know, I couldn't rule it out.
One thing that it has made sure is that Lauren, my missus, has experienced her first having a jersey of a player that no longer plays for your team anymore. So the Diggs jersey has been put right at the back of the wardrobe in favour of the Josh Allen jersey. I just don't see any positives to it for the Texans. I think he was, if we're talking that Kirk Cousins' era at the Vikings was a miserable failure, I think Diggs's era at the Bills, whilst potentially a little bit more exciting, has been a miserable failure. I think he will end his career without a ring, because I don't think he'll do it at the Texans. I think if they did it, it'd be in spite of him, not because of him, because I've watched Buffalo quite closely over the past couple of seasons because my missus is a Buffalo fan and I think he's been pretty poor. He's dropped more balls than I care to mention. I just don't think he's got it anymore. He's the wrong side of 30 and he's very expensive. It would have been a player I'd have gone absolutely nowhere near, put it that way.
Another thing to add to that is he will be coming to either US Bank or London this year, because we play the Texans this year at our place. So with Hunter coming back as well, it'll be interesting to see how his response is, how he's seen by the Vikings fans.
You'd like to think Hunter will get a warm welcome, because I think he's a nice guy, a good player. And left under circumstances that was probably mutually beneficial to us both, he got his money. We managed to get a younger, cheaper replacement with a lot of upside. And he goes to a place that, you know, is potentially a contender, seeing out his career. Stephon Diggs, I don't see him getting the reception anywhere near that Hunter will get, especially if he starts with his antics, which he absolutely could well do.
And just while we're talking about former Vikings on the Texans roster, one man who's going to get a warm welcome is going to be Case Keenum. You know, as a Vikings fan base, I think we sort of exploded with some popularity here in that 2017 season, where, you know, we went from Sam Bradford looking like the best quarterback in the NFL for one game against the Saints to being injured without us knowing about it. And Case Keenum taking us on the most magical roller coaster that, you know, any of us can really say we've experienced in our fandom this century.
Fond memories of Keenum, I think. Exactly as you said, I think he will get a warm welcome, but I am indifferent to Diggs, despite, and everyone's going to Anyone, everyone's going to say, what about the miracle? What about the miracle? Desperate, desperately bad defending. I don't think, I mean, apart from catching the ball, which is exactly his, the minimum requirements of Stefan Diggs' job, I don't think you can credit the miracle with him for him for me, despite the great memories that it brought. Anyway, let's stop talking about players that don't play for us anymore, and let's start talking about players that might play for us, because there's been some news about the second overall pick in the draft. So let's go into it. Let's talk about the draft. A week before draft, we're all getting excited. Let's go talk about our next franchise quarterback. So the news coming out of Washington from Adam Schefter is that Daniels is going pick two, completely against what I was saying last week. But that is all the noise coming out of Washington. And all I can see, you can't see it from wherever you're listening to the podcast from, but I can see a very smug looking face coming straight back at me. John, come on, let's hear it.
Well, I told you this was happening. I told you they were going to go Daniels, didn't I? I said it all last week. I said he wasn't going to slide to 11. They've set their roster up for Daniels in Washington. And that's exactly where they're going to go. But it may just be smoke and mirrors. I take everything at this time of year with a pinch of salt. Let's face it. It could just be smoke and mirrors, but. I seriously thought that Daniels was going to Washington because that's how their roster's set up, and he would fit it, slide in perfectly with that roster.
Exactly as you're thinking, mate. It could well be a Daniels worm on the end of a hook for some classic clickbait a week before the draft, because we don't have a clue what's going to happen, really. There's rumours flying around everywhere. The only one that's absolutely nailed on is Caleb Williams going to the Browns. Caleb Williams going to the Bears, which...
Oh, I'd love him to go to the Browns.
It feels weird, the Browns not having the first overall pick.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely nailed on. But what it does pose the question of, if Caleb Williams does go one, and if Daniels does go two, there's two Viking-shaped quarterbacks available after those two picks. And Rhys, what would you give up to get either of those quarterbacks?
I'd give up more for one than the other, and I feel like that's probably how a lot of people feel, but varying names on who they prefer. For me, I much prefer Drake May. I know he's raw. I know he's, in my opinion, not as raw as JJ McCarthy. We've seen Drake May throw a lot more. We know that he could be overzealous. He could come into the league and be explosive, but, you know, be incredibly boom and bust in terms of you might get four touchdowns a game and two pick sixes. It could really be that way. He's a gunslinger. He takes risks, and he's the one that I'd give up a lot more for. For me, I don't care where I'm trading up. If it's 3, 4, 5, 6, even just to poach the Giants or keep the Giants away, I would happily, trade a good few first round picks for him. I would happily get rid of the two from this year. I'd happily get rid of next year's first round pick. And I'd even throw in change. I'd even go, have a third round pick from, 2 years down the line or whatever it was, a fourth round pick, whatever it would take to get things over the line and keep our weapons intact. I wouldn't want to give up any players, whatever it would take, just to keep us in that driving seat to get that quarterback. That's what I'd do. JJ McCarthy, I have my doubts because I just haven't seen him throw enough. I haven't seen him put the team on his back enough. And I would be hesitant to go any more than the two first round picks that we've got for JJ McCarthy and maybe throwing in a little bit of change to get it over the line. But I would not want to give up three first round picks for him just because I feel there are too many unknowns.
I'm in the same boat. Drake May, for me, is Mr. Minnesota. He just looks like a Vikings quarterback. I think he's got the right frame. I think he's got the right attitude. I think he'll be willing to learn. With the coaching setup that we've got, it's a dream for him to land in Minnesota. And I think he'll have a really long and prosperous career. I am all in on Drake May, and I would do what it takes. Do what it takes. Get him in the building and secure our future for the next 10, 15 years. He's just that's who it should be. JJ McCarthy, I think, is the next best quarterback. And with all the hype, you know, in different seasons, without so many quarterback needy teams, he is a early day two pick, probably. But when you've got so many people needing a quarterback, it just inflates the market. And like you say, Reese, Giants, Broncos, us, Raiders, who is going to go up and get that fourth quarterback in the draft? And how nervous are you going to be? And then therefore, how much are you going to offer to go up and get him? I still don't think the Cards trade out of four, because I think they do take the best player in the draft. In Harrison, I can see the Chargers trading out. I think that is a massive possibility. The Patriots, I can see them trading out because of how new their setup is. I think if you throw another new element into that, which is another quarterback, that could be a disaster for the franchise, for the coaches, for the new setup. I think that JJ McCarthy, I would give this year's two first rounders. I mean, that's why we've got him at the end of the day. We've got them to trade up for a quarterback. If it's JJ McCarthy, I'm same as you. Two first rounders this year and change. If it's Drake May, as the line in draft day goes, whatever it takes.
I agree with both of you. May is the better prospect of both of them. It would be a dream to get May in the door at the Vikings. I think it's going to cost a little too much, personally. But if this is the way it's going, I actually see Daniel sliding. I don't see Daniel sliding. Sorry, that's Richard. JJ McCarthy sliding down the board. I don't see him make it all the way to us, because I think someone will jump up and try and get him at that point. And then I think whoever had that pick will be straight on the phone to the Vikings. Like, this is what I've been offered. And we just have to up that offer for JJ McCarthy. So what I'd give up, I don't know. The two firsts are gone for whatever quarterback we're going up for. That's decided already, isn't it, really? Probably give up first next year and change for May and maybe a third for McCarthy now. Maybe the second, the two firsts, and I think we'd have to give up. No, I'd stick. If he slides, I'd stay the two firsts and maybe a third next year.
I think we're all in agreement. Whoever is going to trade with us so we can get a quarterback is going to have our eye out, I think. But when we are lifting a Lombardi in 3 years' time, no one is going to care about the trade and the picks that we gave up to get them, because, you know, that is the ultimate goal. You draft your quarterback, build a team around him. We've got all this cap space next year. We are the setup. We are. It's like a jigsaw. All the puzzle pieces are falling into place. And if we get the one big piece that we need this year, you know, we can slot in some of the other pieces next year and have a complete puzzle and go for the big game.
The thing is, I know I say what I'd be happy to give up for McCarthy. If the team went and got McCarthy, I'd understand it. But I'd be less inclined to trade up for him. If May slipped to number four, I'd be on the phone, be like, Cardinals, please take my house, take my car. You know, give me the quarterback I want. With McCarthy, I wouldn't be that way. I'd honestly be just as comfortable waiting and taking a quarterback at 11 or 23, because I feel like we are that good of a situation to walk into. And I know that Nixon Penix aren't quite the prospect that McCarthy is in terms of what the ceiling is. But if you want to plug a quarterback in year two, I feel like Penix and Nix are better for it. And I feel like JJ McCarthy, outside the Vikings, he would not start on week one of the of his second season.
And don't sleep on Rattler. Don't sleep on Rattler, because there's
wait for Rattler.
There is some noise. There is some noise around Rattler saying that he's much better than everyone else thinks. Maybe he's the sleeper this year.
I don't know, but the way I see it, every time someone says this guy's going to be the sleeper, he's not. He's not the sleeper. He, like, what do we all say about Malik Willis? He's going to be the sleeper. He's going to be the sleeper. What is he now? First string quarterback, or he was first string quarterback at Tennessee behind Ryan Tannehill and Will Mayo eating banana peel churning Levis. All right. You know, this is the thing. When everyone says this is the sleeper, this is the sleeper, they're not. You know, that's the one that someone will reach on. The sleeper is a Brock Purdy that comes out of nowhere. A Dak Prescott, dare I say, even a Russell Wilson. You know, that's a sleeper. Everyone goes, oh, I didn't see that coming. Whereas everyone goes, when Rattler goes, they'll be like, oh, yeah, great. That's potentially a starting quarterback in 3 years' time. You know, who's really going to wait 3 years for a quarterback prospect to mature when it's not a first-round selection, when you haven't got that confidence of the fifth-year option? For me, the sleeper prospect is not Rattler. It's going to be someone else that surprises us all from like round 4 or 5.
So, guys, I've got a question for you. JJ doesn't go in the top 4. He starts sliding. The Falcons ring us up at number 8. They say, well, they've been offered a ton of picks for JJ. For their pick to trade down, they say to us, they'll give, if we give them 11, 23, they'll give us their second round pick for that number 8 slot. Do you take it?
11, 23 for 8 and 8th pick of the second round, without a doubt, yes, because you're really not giving up much in comparison. I think if you were asking me the same question and saying the Broncos have made an offer, but if you give me 3 first round picks, will you trade up for him? I would go, no, I'm not that desperate. I feel like I could understand if it happened, if we did do the whole Mel Kiper mock thing and take JJ McCarthy in exchange for 3 first round picks. I can understand if it happened, but I just wouldn't be comfortable with it.
Then we'll have the question 2 years down the line of, did we win the trade, the Falcons or the Vikings, especially when Kirk Cousins has gone the other way. It's going to get a little bit messy between the two fan bases. But I mean, we could talk about it all day, and we've talked about it enough. We've definitely talked about enough about the draft, but the countdown is on. I can't wait. It needs to happen tomorrow, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to happen, what are we on now? Day 11 days out, something like that?
11 days at time of recording.
11 days out. So, gents, are we going to come back and speak about it next week?
Absolutely. And what I'll say is, if you do enjoy coming back and listening to us every week, make sure you leave us a review, you know, Spotify, Apple, Podbean. I don't care where you listen, because we love that you listen, and that's the thing that matters to us. But if you leave us a review, it helps us out. And if you don't like what we say, you know, Rich welcomes private feedback.
We are hopefully, well, at least a very small section of the voice of the UK and Ireland Minnesota Vikings fan club. But what we do need is the rest of the fans and the rest of the club to tell us what you want us to talk about. Tell us what you want us to talk about. Give us them questions. We love answering questions. And if you're available, give us a shout, and we'll see if we can schedule to get your opinions on the show as well. You know, we're an open forum. We like opinions. I'm sure Rhys loves booking people in to come on our podcast and finding the time to do that. But yeah, just reach out, because we want to be as interactive as possible. We do want your feedback, because if we're doing, you know, if we need to be doing something different, you tell us in private, not in public. But tell us in private, and we'll make those changes.
Well, obviously, we're open to all feedback. you know, and if you've got a question, feedback, whatever it is, you can DM us on all socials, and you can also reach us via email, which is ukvikespod@gmail.com. That's ukvikespod@gmail.com.
Sound like a pro, Reece. You sound like a pro.
One more thing before we go. I just do have to mention that the Viking Stadium is not going vegan. If anyone that believes that meme that's going around, the Viking Stadium is not going all vegan.
I mean, my history is not great, but vegan Vikings is not something that appeared too many times when I was at high school.
I mean, vegan cheese curds, could you imagine it?
It's I'm not going to imagine it, because it ain't happening. Be as vegan as you want in the privacy of your own home, but in the Viking Stadium, it ain't happening anytime soon. So with all that talk of food, I suppose let's call this a wrap.
That aged worse than vegan ice cream.
Right then, come on, say goodbye, gentlemen.
Goodbye, gentlemen.
Goodbye, gentlemen.
Till next week. Thanks for listening. See ya. Ta-ra.